Separating the policy from the politics, delving deeper into what is happening in our world today, and sharing the information you may not know if you didn't listen to this show. iHub Radio presents The Lovable Liberal. This is the Anita Rufus Show, civil discourse on current events and politics. Here's Anita.
And again, I thank you so much for joining me. I am here live every Thursday from 1 to 3 Pacific Time. You can listen to a rerun of my show on either Saturday morning or Sunday morning, and you can go to the iHubRadio.com website, pull down shows, or in fact, pull down something called Schedule, and it'll lay out for you everything you can listen to all week long. And speaking of listening to shows on this network, from 3 to 4 following my show, you can listen to Randy Florence doing the Coachella Valley Chronicles. And he's going to be talking to Judy Vossler, who was formerly the general manager of the La Quinta Resort. And she's got stories about everybody from Michael Jackson to Robert Wagner to Candace Bergen to Johnny Carson. And that's worth tuning in to listen to. The Coachella Valley Chronicles, from 3 to 4, right after my show today. I want to talk about the Supreme Court is beginning to put out a lot of its decisions. You know, the court starts on the first Monday of October, and they listen to cases. They don't always take every case that's put before them. A lot of them they just send back, and almost every case that goes to the Supreme Court, almost every case, has come up through the appeals court process. So you may have a trial in your own state, and then you go to the federal court, and then you don't like that judgment, so you take it to an appeals court, and you're not happy with that, and so you ask the Supreme Court to look at it because you think it's basically some kind of constitutional issue or complex contract issue. And the Supreme Court may look at the case and say, no, we aren't even going to deal with that. It doesn't rise to the level of the kind of case that we would want to hear. And so whatever the appeals court ruling was, if the Supreme Court doesn't take it, that's where it ends. So appeals courts have huge impact, if only because for the region of the country that a particular appeals court represents, their decision may be the prevailing decision for all those states, even though it might not apply to the other states. And yet, it could still be appealed up to the Supreme Court to see if they'll take it. So, for example, California's legislature passed this ban on assault weapons being able to be sold in California. Well, those who didn't like that went to the court, and the appeals court put assault weapons on hold. So the idea that a lower court had said, well, yeah, we can't have the state of California banning all assault weapons, and then it went to the appeals court, and they said, well, hold on a minute. Well, that will ultimately make its way to the Supreme Court. And a lot of times, that really is why some of these cases are brought. They know they're probably not going to win, even at the appeals court, but they want to get it to where they can take it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court held this past week that the regulation that California had, that Cesar Chavez, in fact, brought about as a result of his activities in trying to organize for better conditions for farm workers, we had a California regulation that allowed union organizers a certain period of time that they could contact farm workers at their workplaces, in other words, on the farm property. Well, in a 6-3 ruling, and this is the 6 conservatives against the 3 more liberal judges, on the justices on the Supreme Court, 6-3 ruling was a blow to the unions. limiting the power of organized labor, saying that it is trespassing on basically what is private property for the union to be able to go into the farm workers' workplaces. Well, considering the fact that most farm workers live on the properties where they're working, how on earth are unions supposed to be able to influence anything at all? Supreme Court doesn't care. Private property trumps everything. Supreme Court also ruled this week in favor of a cheerleader from Pennsylvania. She was kicked off her high school junior varsity cheering squad. And she sent a message on Snapchat to a bunch of friends, totally trashing the school and the squads and the coaches. And a lower court said that the school officials had no authority to kick her off that squad merely because she had said things on social media off campus that they didn't like. The justices confirmed a ruling by a lower court that the school district had violated the First Amendment by disciplining this gal for speech off campus. It was her own personal speech. They may not have liked it, but they didn't have the right to curtail that speech. Now, you know, the First Amendment, and in fact, the whole Bill of Rights, is not about, for example, what private institutions can do or say to somebody that they're not happy with. The First Amendment says the government, the public entity, cannot curtail free speech. Well, guess what schools are? They are a stand-in. They are a public institution. They're not the legislature. They're not the Congress. But they are a public institution. And therefore, they are subject to the rule that they do not have the right to curtail someone's free speech. The justices also ruled on an individual's right to private property. And this is about a guy who was followed home by a California policeman because the policeman said that he was concerned this individual was driving his car and blaring loud music, and the cop followed him home and was going to stop the car just as the person pulled into their own driveway and into their garage. The justices sided with the motorist, who said that when the police officer followed him without a warrant into his home garage, where he was then questioned and ticketed for drunk driving, the justices set aside the guy's conviction and said that the Fourth Amendment usually forbids the police to enter a driveway or a home without a search warrant unless it's a true emergency. So, for example, if the guy had committed a crime and he was on the lam and the police were following him, that might be a different situation. But in this case, police searches of homes, that's an invasion of your private property without proper warrant that allows the police to come into or on your private space. Fourth Amendment, search and seizure. The court also ruled that the NCAA cannot bar certain kinds of modest payments to student athletes. The argument was made that, well, you know, people who come to our games, they want to know that they're watching amateur athletes. if they're getting any kind of compensation, then they are equivalent to professionals. Well, the court said, no, they really aren't. There's no reason why they can't receive an academic-related perk. I mean, what do you think a scholarship is? It's an academic-related payment. If you don't have to pay the money and they're paying the money on your behalf, how do you define amateur? This includes things like scholarships for graduate degrees, postgraduate internships where somebody gets to still play football or baseball for that institution while they are in an internship that they're getting paid for. They can be receiving computers or musical instruments or other types of equipment related to their education without losing that amateur status. That's what the court said, Supreme Court. And finally, the Supreme Court did say that Obamacare is still the law. Now, of course, Democrats want to find a way to expand that coverage with major health care reforms. They want to lower drug prices. They're preparing a multi-trillion dollar infrastructure package that would allow legislation to pass the Senate on what is known as budget reconciliation with just 51 votes. And it would include measures that would lower the eligibility rate for Medicare health coverage from 65, where it is now, to 60. It would expand benefits under the program. It would lower drug prices. If there's anything Medicare needs to expand, it's coverage for at-home care for people who are in a hospice situation. Now, of course, the prescription drug industry does not want to give Medicare the ability to negotiate prices. And, of course, they give a whole lot of money to members of Congress. And people can't stay in Congress under the current voting system we have without enough money to run a campaign. Insurers, insurance companies, they don't like the idea of lowering the age for people to get into Medicare because it means they would lose clients. We want people paying us for private health care. We don't want them in that system that seniors love because it gives them access to so much health care. We don't want that. These are the kinds of things that the Supreme Court is involved in that make a difference. And that difference is very often related to the kind of policy that Congress needs to look at. So, for example, if the Supreme Court, let's say, did decide they want to strike down abortion rights, well, there are some states that have already put in place laws that say that in their state, if the Supreme Court turns down abortion rights, then in their state, nobody will have a right to get an abortion, period. They will get rid of every abortion clinic. There are other states that have already said if the Supreme Court strikes that down, our state is going to continue to allow women to exercise that right. Do we really want a system where everybody has different rights based on where they live? I don't think so.
She's lovable, she's liberal, and she's here to bring a tone of civility to political discussion you aren't likely to find anywhere else. The Anita Rufus Show, with your lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
I want to talk very quickly before we get to the bottom of the hour about voting rights. This is the issue that is staying front and center, and it is both political and policy. And the separation of those two is really important when it comes to voting rights. We know that Republicans blocked the voting rights bill that was brought up in the Senate that passed the House. All 50 GOP senators opposed opening debate. This wasn't a vote about whether or not the bill should pass. This was about whether they should even talk about it. You know, and there's a part of me that says, don't be afraid to speak the truth, because they're not afraid of lying. Republicans in Arizona, for example, have attacked Katie Hobbs, who is the Secretary of State of the state of Arizona, opposing their efforts to overturn the presidential election. She's saying, hey, listen, our state recounted, our state certified, our state had a fair election, and this is the place where all that crazy auditing is going on. But there's backlash to this kind of politics when you're talking about policy. Our policy is when a state has certified an election and it's already been recounted and we have a peaceful transfer of power, you don't try to overturn those election results. Well, guess what? She took a stand. The Republicans in Arizona have attacked her. And now she's getting enormous support from the public and has decided she's going to run for governor. Good for her. Now, of course, Republicans seem to think that if you can't win an election fairly, you might as well rig the system, while they're yelling that the Democrats are trying to rig the system. In Georgia, Republicans are removing Democrats of color from local election boards. Why would you do that? Why would you remove anybody from a local election board that has been appointed by the people of that area? In Arkansas, they're taking election control away from county authorities. We have a very effective county registrar of voters in Riverside. Republicans are trying to take away their power to run a fair, free election. In Kansas, Republicans overrode a veto from the Democratic governor to enact laws that strip the governor of the power to modify election law. For example, in a pandemic, when you say, hey, we don't want people going outside and standing in line to vote, we're going to put in more mailboxes and we're going to send mail ballots to everybody. That seems to be the right thing to do. As governor, they can declare a state of emergency. But in Kansas, the Republicans are saying, well, you can declare whatever you want, but you can't enact any law, or you can't modify any election law, because we don't want you to be able to do that, because you're a Democrat and we're Republicans. One of the most heinous things that is in some of these model bills that have been drafted by conservative right-wing think tanks and are being sent out to legislatures all over the country, Republican legislatures, is a provision that several states have already put in place that would allow the state legislature to overturn the results of an election in their state if they suspect that there was fraud. Suspect. They don't have to even prove it. Meanwhile, a Republican official in Ohio voted twice in the November election. A guy named Edward Snodgrass, who was a trustee for a township in Ohio, he admitted that he forged his dead father's signature on an absentee ballot and then voted again as himself. I was just trying to execute a dying man's wishes. He was busted when a Delaware County election worker questioned the signature on the father's ballot. This is what local election officials have been trained to do, to be able to fairly certify an election result. The guy said, well, you know, I made an honest error. because my dad had broken his right arm and he'd already been, I'd been signing for him because I had a power of attorney for him. My dad had requested the absentee ballot. The fact that his father had died didn't seem to have made any difference. Meanwhile, we get these cases all too often where people have voted with the Republicans, voted for Donald Trump, voted more than once. I haven't heard the Republicans screaming about that voter fraud when it happens and is done by Republicans. They only care if they can throw shade on Democrats.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
Okay, I have some items that you might not know about if you didn't listen to this show. There are some international news items that we need to at least be aware of. And some of them illustrate why it is so important for the United States' reputation in the world to be restored and reestablished. For example, in Hungary, the European Union's chief executive said that they would take any action necessary to thwart a new law in Hungary that would ban content portraying or promoting homosexuality or sex reassignment to children. Parliament passed this bill. It still has to be endorsed by the president of Hungary before it will take effect. But this law that they passed would prohibit sharing content on homosexuality or sex reassignment to people under 18 in school sex education programs or in films or in advertisements. Now, of course, the government is saying, well, this is meant to protect children. Well, we know that there are, for example, trans children or those who are questioning their sexual identity in their teens. Shouldn't they at least be exposed to information that might prevent them from feeling that they are all alone and that they have no reason to continue living? Which is all too often what is happening to LGBTQ young people. And, you know, I have kids who are straight, but I certainly wanted them to have comprehensive sex education because there are kids as young as 12 or 13 or 14 who are having consensual sexual contact with other kids. They need to at least know what it takes to be safe and what is and is not appropriate behavior, like consent. In Ethiopia, during very closed-door talks that took place in February in Ethiopia, the Prime Minister, Abiy Ahmed, and other ministers said out loud that they were going to wipe out the Tigrayans for 100 years. This is genocide of a particular population of people within Ethiopia that they consider the other and not worthy of living. You've heard me say it many times with regard to evolution. We are barely out of the slime. Kim Jong-un, the head of North Korea, wants some attention. He said that North Korea should get prepared for both dialogue and confrontation with the United States, and especially to get fully prepared for confrontation. That means spending more money on arms, less money on food. This statement by Kim indicates that he will push to strengthen his nuclear arsenal, to increase pressure on Washington, to give up what North Korea considers to be a hostile policy toward them. But he also wants talks. You know, it's like he's saying, okay, sure, there's Vladimir Putin, but what am I, chopped liver? At least Trump liked me and loved me and wrote letters and gave me standing in the world as someone worth talking to an American president. The very crime, supposedly, that Biden committed that the Republicans were so upset about because he was giving Putin equal footing as the head of the nation. Well, what did Trump do with Kim? In Hong Kong, in the year since China passed sweeping national security laws for Hong Kong, the mainland government, the Chinese government, has steadily been tightening its grip on Hong Kong. Now they've said they are going to censor Hong Kong films that they consider a threat to Beijing's sovereignty. They're calling for work by an artist whose name is Ai Weiwei. He's a dissident artist. They want him barred from having his work shown in a museum in Hong Kong. They've been sentencing pro-democracy activists to prison. And last week, the police in Hong Kong raided something called the Apple Daily, the biggest openly pro-democracy newspaper in the city. They arrested the top editors of that paper and froze the bank account. Listen, I can understand why any head of a state, for example, the President of the United States, would want autocracy powers. Because look how easy it is to shut off your opponents and make things happen that you couldn't make happen if you actually had to work through layers of laws and rules. In 2020, between war, persecution, human rights violations, and other factors, not unlike the pandemic, 3 million refugees and displaced people had to flee their homes last year. The United Nations said the cumulative number of the world's displaced people rose to almost 82.5 million people. That's roughly the population of the whole country of Germany. And it is a record for the number of displaced people since World War II. There are millions who have fled places like Syria and Afghanistan because of wars. The UN said that 1% of all humanity on the planet is displaced. And there are twice as many people as there were 10 years ago who are being forcibly displaced. 42% of these displaced people across the globe are under the age of 18. And this is only going to increase as we have more wars, more armed conflict, like what's going on in Ethiopia or in Syria. And it is important to note that approaching 50% of these displaced people worldwide are young people under the age of 18. Now, I don't know if you heard this news item. This really made me get a little wonky. The four Saudi Arabians who helped to kill that journalist named Jamal Khashoggi in 2018, they had paramilitary training in the United States, approved by the State Department. The fact that our government approved high-level military training for these operatives who then went on to carry out this grisly killing shows how intensely intertwined the United States has become with Saudi Arabia, which is an autocratic nation. And that has been particularly true through all of the years, especially under the Bush presidencies, and then with former President Trump dancing and bowing to some, what was it, a piece of crystal or something when he was in Saudi Arabia. The first place he went as a sitting president internationally, unlike Joe Biden, who went to NATO and the European Union. And finally, I want to share with you, Pakistan's prime minister was being interviewed. This guy is a former cricket star who was known as a playboy before he became prime minister of Pakistan. And he said during this interview, when he was being asked about whether or not the rights of women would be minimized if the Taliban take over when the American forces leave Afghanistan. And he was asked about that and whether or not this was something that was also true within Pakistan, about women being required to wear Muslim garb. And he said, if a woman is wearing very few clothes, it will have an impact. It will have an impact on the men, unless they're robots. I mean, it's common sense. To which, of course, my immediate reaction was, sure, why try to control the men when you can control the women? Head coverings? I don't have a problem with people deciding to cover their heads. Women do that in church. Men do it in Jewish temples. But to have to cover your entire body with only your eyes being shown through a little slit, and to only be allowed to go out in public when you are accompanied by men, because otherwise you will surely be attacked and raped, that isn't a problem where we need to control women. It's a problem where we need to damn well be controlling men. Now, I will also say, there was a councilman in North Carolina who's been slammed for suggesting making it a misdemeanor crime to donate food or money directly to the homeless. Guy's name is Tariq Bukhari. He is a representative for a district in Charlotte, North Carolina. Floated this idea during a council business meeting where they were talking about strategies to combat the homelessness problem in Charlotte. He said, people aren't getting it, and they're still bringing food and money and resources directly to the folks that are out there right now. They're only making themselves feel good. They're hurting the ultimate folks. Perhaps we should explore making that a misdemeanor. He said, I think we need a heavier dose of tough love amongst this community, especially amongst those who continually give money and food and clothing directly to these folks, instead of giving to the organizations that are designed to help them. Well, if his suggestion is followed, that would mean that if you give money or food or clothing to a homeless person, you would have to pay a fine, and you would be guilty of a misdemeanor. By God, we shouldn't be helping those people. That just encourages them to stay on the street. In China, a modern art gallery is being looked at because one exhibit that was used that used university students as the subjects for a project that they called Uglier and Uglier, where an artist ranked women based on how attractive he found them. Male artist, his name is Song Ta. The exhibition included photos and videos he took of women passing him on the street on a college campus in 2013, and he put them into a 7-hour-long video where he ranked all these women from prettiest to ugliest. Now, he knew that there was going to be an uproar, but he invited people to come early to the exhibit because he said, you know, the uproar probably meant they wouldn't get to see it. I'm thinking to myself, a 7-hour-long video? Are you kidding me?
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
So did you hear the one about the incident that took place in Japan where they rescued from the sea what appeared to be a drowning woman that turned out to be a sex doll? Seriously. Somehow or other, this big balloony kind of sex doll ended up in the water, and they thought it was a woman drowning, so they went in to get her. Who throws a sex doll into the water? Okay, I want to talk about something fairly serious for just a minute. Since 9/11, four times as many United States service members and veterans have died by suicide than have been killed in combat. Four times as many. This is based on research that was compiled by a group called Costs of War Project at Brown University. They found an estimated 30,177 active duty personnel and veterans who've served in the military since 9/11 have died by suicide, compared with just over 7,000 who've been killed in military operations since 9/11, including the whole long war in Afghanistan. 30,000 active duty personnel and veterans died by suicide since 9/11. The majority of those deaths are among veterans, who accounted for over 22,000 of those 30,000, which means that a total of just over 5,000 active duty service members died by suicide since 9/11. From 2011 to 2020, an estimated almost 1,200 National Guard and 1,600 reservists have died by suicide. What is causing this? The factors that Brown University isolated as the reasons for this, one of the key factors they found was indifference on the part of the American public. We just aren't paying attention and don't seem to care. Also, the increase of improvised explosive devices, those IEDs, have caused more traumatic brain injuries, post-traumatic stress disorder, and other medical and emotional factors. And I want to publicly give applause to both Joe and Jill Biden for supporting vets and their families and the families of active duty service members. If you will recall, during the Obama administration, it was Jill Biden and Michelle Obama that consistently and continuously met with and supported policies to help military families and those who were suffering from these kinds of distressing things. Okay, to lighten things up, for those of you who don't know, Connecticut just became the 19th state to legalize the use of recreational marijuana for anyone over the age of 21. Three cheers for Connecticut. And if you didn't see it, this is the last week of shows that Conan O'Brien is going to be doing of his late night show. He's going to be leaving the network, and his show will be shut down. Well, during this last week, Seth Rogen was his first guest Monday night on the Conan O'Brien show. and they smoked a joint on air. Conan was asking Seth Rogen, you know, I'm not sure what I'm going to be able to do now that I'm not going to be working. I have to find a way to fill my time. I want to figure out. And Seth said, well, you could just smoke pot a lot. And Conan said, well, you know, I've never really smoked pot. And so Seth Rogen pulled a joint out of his shirt pocket. And they lit it up on air. I didn't see that Conan inhaled. He took a puff, held it in his mouth for a while, and then blew it out. But I didn't see he actually inhaled. Seth Rogen deeply inhaled, and so did Andy Richter, who is Conan's sidekick on the show. So Conan figured out how to hold the joint. Obviously, the joke is that the interview went up in smoke. Ha, ha, ha. The audience loved it. Twitter loved it. And it is legal in California. What was funny was when Conan became rather self-aware and wanted to know, was it having any effect? When does this thing that's going to happen happen? He asked Seth Rogen. That was funny. And it was very cool. I mean, what are they going to do to him? Throw him off the air? He's leaving anyway when this week is over. Tonight, he's going to have... last night he had Billy Crystal. I think tonight will be the final show of Conan, if you want to tune in and watch, because obviously he's going off the air. He doesn't care what happens next. If you're interested at all in the policy discussion around political districting and gerrymandering, you have a chance to be heard on this today by those who actually are able to do something about it. Listen for your call to action, which you must take today by listening to the John McMullen Show here on iHub Radio from 4 to 6 this afternoon. And I want to share with you that you can always get podcasts of my shows. Go to wherever you get your podcasts and just put in iHub and Anita Rufus. Or you can go to the iHubRadio.com website. And that will allow you to pull down. Up in the left corner, there's this little kind of box with straight lines. And if you click on that, comes down a menu, and among the things on the menu are shows. And if you click on that, it'll have all of the people who do shows on iHub, including me. You can just scroll down to the Anita Rufus Show, and you can access podcasts there. I also want to share something really important with you, and that is, regardless of where you are across the country, the American Red Cross is badly in need of blood donors. This is a huge issue, especially with a lot of people who are suffering as a result of gun violence across this country right now. Let me also remind you, next year, there are 20 Senate Republican seats up in the midterm election and only 10 Democrats. If you care about the Biden agenda and you care about what is going on, send a message and vote and get everybody you know out to vote and get young people registered as long as they're 18. This is important. See you next week.